What About Vietnam? A podcast with Gary Newsom. The series where Curry talks with travellers about their experiences and adventures. Find out more about Vietnam from the people who have actually been there.
What about Vietnam?
Whether it's adventure, exploring the culture and cuisine, shopping, or just soaking up the sun. Let Curry and her travellers pave the way for a magical holiday in Vietnam.
What about Vietnam?
Xin chào and welcome to What About Vietnam. Before I get into the show, I just wanted to reach out to everyone that takes the time out to contact me and through the website, whether you do it through some lovely messages that I've got through the voice option on the main page. I love getting your emails. I love getting your messages via our social pages. You know, your feedback is rich. It's what makes me doing this show all the more worthwhile. And, you know, some of the information you give me will be the topics of future podcasts. So really important, and I just wanted to make sure you know how much it means to me and that I really appreciate you doing it. I'd also like to just remind you that we do offer travel planning advice. I'm happy to put a full itinerary and trip plan designed to your specific needs together just for a small fee. You can find all that information on the travel services page on the website. If you'd like to really help us, it would be great if you could give us a rating or a review on your podcast channel of listening. So on your iTunes or your Spotify or whatever, if there is the option to leave a rating or review, please do so. The hungry beast of that algorithm is what drives us all. So I'd be really grateful if you would do that. Sign up for our newsletter. Please stay tuned. Thank you for being a wonderful supporter. And okay, let's just get on with the next show. This one is extremely topical as I'm joined by Florian Rucker, who takes us through the journey of being a digital nomad in Vietnam, focusing on co-working in Hoi An. Now, with the advent of the new tourist e-visa coming up in Vietnam in August 15th, being extended to 90 days, this opens the doors to more people to take their work and travel. And since COVID, this concept isn't exclusive to the backpacker or adventure traveller. Working remotely has become normalised and proven to be just as effective. So, what about Vietnam? Flo, as he likes to be called, runs a co-working space in Hoi An called The Hub. I've known about The Hub since 2017, but Flo and I got together last year and just had a chat about how he's taken The Hub to what I think just the next level and created a really very friendly community-based environment. Now, Flo himself has been living abroad since before digital nomading was really a thing. Originally a Berliner, he spent his first year abroad at 16 in the US, then lived in seven other countries throughout his life. With a master's from the University of Cambridge, he has a background in development aid and is an IT agency owner. In 2020, he fell in love with Hoi An and its community of digital nomads at The Hub Hoi An. After being a customer for a year, he bought the space in early 2021 and rebuilt it nearby in the middle of the rice fields in 2022-23. And I'm not kidding, it is in the middle of the rice fields. Flo offers some of the nuances of being a digital nomad in this episode. And I think he'll leave you thinking that, you know, dreams like this aren't so fanciful as they once were. And now more than ever, this kind of workation, as we're calling it, and in particular in Vietnam, in a very friendly co-working space like the Hub in Hoi An is very doable. Let's welcome Flo to the program. Hello, Flo. Welcome to What About Vietnam?
Hi, Kerry. Thanks so much for having me.
I've been wanting to do a show about the subject of digital nomading for quite some time. So I'm delighted to have you on the show, and I'm really kind of interested in delving into this subject because obviously since COVID, even pre-COVID, you know, there's been a lot of talk about digital nomading. And now with the remote working situation that was kind of born and fostered since COVID, people being able to travel again and looking for different ways to work away. I'm really keen to talk about what brought you to Vietnam and in particular, what brought you to Hoi An?
Sure. It's a fascinating subject. I love talking about it. I came to Vietnam and Hoi An as a digital nomad. I was in Chiang Mai before. Chiang Mai has a burning season where really you want to leave the north of Thailand during that time. And Vietnam always had the sense of adventure to me, like a little bit like Thailand, but much more adventurous and kind of like a little bit more, maybe like a little bit more rough around the edges, but very promising. And that's kind of like what lured me to Vietnam. Let's try this out. I knew Central Vietnam especially is this kind of nomad hub with Da Nang and Hoi An. So I wanted to try it out. I found that Vietnam is nothing like Thailand, but the rest was quite was a little bit like I thought. It's adventurous, it's exciting, it's beautiful. There's a deep sense of freedom here, which also you don't have in that many Asian countries. It's a very strong sense of live and let live. So much about Vietnam. Then Hoi An in particular, it's funny. So it took me a long time to figure out, do I want to be in Da Nang or do I want to be in Hoi An? And I was a little bit unsure about it. I was like, what's the right place? Clearly, Da Nang is more of a city. It has a slightly larger community. So I tried that first. It turned out that I was actually quite lonely in Da Nang, which is actually a typical city effect, right? Big city effect. In theory, there's more people, but it's easy to get lost a little bit. So then I was like, oh, Hoi An supposedly has this great, like, tight-knit, smaller but, like, closer nomad community. So I was like, let's try this out for a few days. I did that. Luckily, it's just 30 minutes away. But it sometimes feels much further away because Hoi An is really, they're so deeply embedded into nature and, like, much smaller, much, much cuter kind of. So I did that 30-minute trip and I was like, let's try this for 3 or 4 days. And then I just stayed. I just went back to Da Nang to pack my bags. So Hoi An won my heart over very easily. And for me, it's mostly about the community. Now, it helps to have the rice fields, to have the ocean, have the mountains not far away. The old town, actually, I leave a little bit for visitors. I go there like once in a blue moon. But that's a little bit more of a tourist thing. It's beautiful. But of course, if you live here, you're going to be a little bit more focused on the nature at hand.
I couldn't agree with you more. Da Nang is an interesting city, and I'm glad you brought it up in comparison to Hoi An. And I want to delve into a little bit more about why Da Nang and why Hoi An. But in particular, Da Nang, I find, is very spread out. It's very hard to find a center to Da Nang, in my opinion. And, you know, it is, as you say, quite challenging for international tourists or international travelers in Da Nang, unless you know somebody or you go there in particular to do some work, or maybe you work in hospitality or something like that. Other than that, I can totally relate to your
kind of feeling a little bit estranged and a little bit lonely in that city, I can easily do the same. So I tend to only have a couple of days there because I know people there. But once I've seen them, half an hour down the road is my next community, which is Hoi An. And you're right, it is very community-based, yeah. Hoi An, and it's easier to get around. So you haven't got that big city expansiveness. There's definitely centres. You've got the old town and then you've got the beach. And they're both kind of different kind of vibes, I guess, is a way to describe it. But, you know, I think you did well, and I think it was a smart move to choose Hoi An, because I think from a community aspect, that's very, very easy to sell and very easy to become a part of. And they're pretty welcoming in Hoi An, no matter who you are, what you do, they seem to just open their arms to you. So good choices there. But I have a question. I'm out of all the cities in Vietnam for digital nomading and workation, as we're going to talk about, why did Da Nang and secondary to that Hoi An, why not Hanoi? Why not Ho Chi Minh? Why not, I don't know, some other major city per se?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So the big cities have their own advantages, of course. So if you're into being in a big city, if you want to have just more options, let's say maybe you do like a specific kind of dance, you're like advanced salsa, or you might want to have like a big drop shipping community, which happens to be one of the professions that nomads like. You might want to go to Saigon or Hanoi. Also, of course, there's going to be just in generally a little bit more happening, you know. In Hoi An, we'll have a good party maybe two or three times a month. And obviously in the big cities, every weekend, Friday to Sunday. So Hoi An to me has, so first of all, it's in general the small town effect of you drive everywhere in 10 minutes, you drive to the beach in 10 minutes, you drive to the old town in 10 minutes, often less actually. Everybody is nearby, and then people get to know each other in different ways. You know, when you go to a party here, after being here for a while, you'll know the people. It's a very sweet, small community. And I also kind of enjoy the mix of, you have your expats who will send their kids to an international school here. They've been here for years, sometimes decades. You have your tourists who might have arrived, yesterday, and they might be leaving tomorrow. And you have your digital nomads, kind of my people. I guess I'm slowly turning into an expat here, but in spirit, I consider myself still a nomad who might be sticking around for a couple of months, sometimes a couple of weeks. And I really enjoy the dynamism of that kind of that mix. It's like a very fun kind of salad bowl of people hanging out together. At the end of the day, it's just a really close-knit community. There's a lot of events in the small community, and they're harder to find. For me, a lot harder to find in the big city. In the big city, you have to do a lot more work on your own. And I include Da Nang in that. And in that regard, I don't consider Hoi An secondary to Da Nang. If you like the big city, then Da Nang is for you. If you like a community where the events are almost like served to you and almost like curated for you,
and it's definitely a more chilled vibe. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit more about what you've done with Hub Hoi An, which is awesome. But I just think that if you are the kind of digital nomad that wants that real hyper kind of stay and communication and connectivity with people, yes, you're right, a Ho Chi Minh or a Hanoi, and there are some very established communities that operate and do this kind of thing very well and have done so for many years. But you're right, it's a totally different connection for a digital nomad. So I guess it's up to the individual about, the kind of community they want to work in, to to, you know, become a part of if that's where they're heading. Let me ask you just to get some understanding for people, because I'm thinking that a lot of my audience are going to be interested in this subject because how it is kind of evolving, our work life, our work futures are being kind of remolded, changing and offering different options to people. And I think that workation or that digital nomading, I mean, a girl that used to do some work for me before, you know, she just said, you know, like, I'm going nomading. And I went, oh, wow, that's just fantastic. But, you know, like, that kind of thing would never have come up years ago. So tell me, what makes digital nomading possible? What does a digital nomad need to have or do or whatever to just make it happen?
Right, right. So what makes it possible? I mean, I guess the obvious one would be internet connectivity. That's just been on the up and up. And in Southeast Asia, it's actually surprisingly good. I don't know what it's like where you're from. Like the countries I've lived in Europe, for example, yeah, not that great, right, for you as well. In I've been surprised about how good the coverage is here. 4G, LTE internet everywhere. You might be on a hike somewhere in a jungle and you get like a video call from
yes,
your mom at home.
That's true.
And you'd be like, what? Yeah, because you're still connected. So that's one of the things that like positively surprises people. So of course that makes it possible. Everybody has a laptop now rather than a desktop. So that's kind of like the very foundation of it. And then, step by step, we're seeing a cultural shift towards this being possible, right? Well, this used to be a gradual shift, right? Like every year it's become a little bit more normal. You know, initially it was a little bit more the freelancers, and then maybe increasingly companies would also allow employees to do this. It's become also much more of a, you know, we want to keep amazing talent, so we're going to help them have the best life that they can have, right? And so we're going to support this. More and more companies are now paying for their employees' co-working space memberships. We had this gradual increase. And then, of course, since COVID, we've seen this massive shift towards work at home. And going with that, this massive shift also in attitude of employers, right? So this is now something that's just everybody practiced this for 2 years. And so this now makes it possible for a lot more people to do this. And we're also seeing a lot more people come into the space that are new to this, right? That might be on their first trip. Whereas before, we had always a lot of people who've been doing this for years and just a couple of new people. Right now, a lot more like new faces, which of course we love, and it's also become more diverse. So more professions and
I'm intrigued, and I think everyone listening would be also intrigued. Is this just for young people, or is there a certain type of person? Like, you'd have to be fairly used to being mobile. You couldn't be a kind of a sedentary person. So you've got to be able to, you know, pack up everything and put it in a backpack or a bag and move on to the next location with, as you say, your laptop, your bits and pieces, I guess, to make it happen. So is there a kind of a certain kind of person that succeeds or does very well in this form of remote work?
Honestly, I don't think we're seeing a lot of limits here. It's definitely not limited by age. It's also at the co-working space. Sure, like, are there more people who are maybe in their, you know, like late 20s, 30s? Yes, but we're seeing customers of all ages come by, and we love that too. Like, we're really all about diversity, and that goes along all kinds of axes, right? In terms of what you need to bring, I mean, you need a passport, and you need a, some people literally just work on their phone. If you have a laptop, it'll probably be a little bit more productive, but that's all you need to bring. Now, most people are used to traveling and, you know, packing up their backpack or their suitcase. It might be a skill that you get better at. After a while, you realize, oh, okay, maybe I also should have a travel scale or like a, you know, like one of those laundry packs that allow you to compress your stuff. But you're just fine. You're just fine without that. The kind of person that succeeds, honestly, I don't think it's that much of a challenge. You should be aware that nomading doesn't have only advantages, right? It's obviously exciting. It's obviously
attractive, you know, like option.
An amazing way to it's a very attractive option, but it has challenges, and you shouldn't go in all starry eyes and not assuming that. So read up on it, and very specifically, I would mention, you know, if you're traveling by yourself, your friends and your family stay at home, right? So you need to, and that's why we already talked about community. So you should be, unless you love being alone and by yourself, and some people, that's them, you'll want to have a plan for how you meet people. You'll want to make that a priority in your scheduling. And it comes more natural and more easily to people. Some people just walk into a bar and they walk out with five friends. Others need to be scheduling ahead for events that might be happening. Or go to a space that makes those events for them, right? And that's definitely part of my mission at the Hub. We have many weekly events, and we do a lot. This is honestly almost as important to us as making people productive. It's like helping them be social. So I would that consider the first challenge. The other one is, you know, if your colleague or your boss isn't sitting next to you, you need to be a little bit more on top of your time management and your self-management. Now, that's a skill that you can learn. I wouldn't say I'm like a role model for that, and I've gotten a lot better at it. So, for example, I learned like I can't really work in a hotel room. That's one of those things that just make it very hard for me to actually get into work mode. So I need to go to another place where I can focus and where my subconscious understands, this is where the
And that's done. A really good point to bring up, because I think there is two different types of people. I mean, I can work from a hotel room, and certainly in Vietnam, when it's hot during the middle of the day, it's probably my best option to sit in the hotel room, to jump on my computer, stay in the air conditioning, and then go out when it's cooler. And, you know, I kind of wised up to the Vietnamese that they would kind of do things early morning or afternoon, because in the middle of the day, it's just too damn hot. But I know also after that, I likewise have to get out, and I have to make a point of going somewhere for some kind of community aspect or connectivity, especially because, you know, I tend to use up all of my 30 days visa as I can at this point. So this is probably a good segue for us to talk about visas and how in the digital nomading space, how people manage it. Because I know I've seen with the Hub, even prior to yourself taking it over, people coming in and coming out because the visa restrictions became quite prohibitive. And we're still on a tourist visa of 30 days. But there is talks of a 90-day visa coming back, which will be joy, oh joy, I think, for certainly your business and for people like me who maybe want to stay 5 weeks or 6 weeks. And for long-haul people, I think the aspect, you know, if you're coming from Europe or you're coming from the States, it is a long trip. You do want to have a really good experience of Vietnam. And something I really try to do in this podcast is emphasize to people that, you know, Vietnam is just so diverse. To try and fit it all in a very short time is crazy stuff. And you may not even enjoy it if you have to do that. So giving yourself more time becomes a real luxury in this space, because Vietnam just, you know, it's just so wonderful in the sense that you can just have so many different experiences. And if you can do that while you can fit in work, well, wahoo to that. That is just, to me, a swimming idea. So let's just talk a little bit about how you or some of the people in your community, how they're getting around the visa situation and, you know, what are their aspirations or hopes in this space?
Yeah, yeah. So if you don't mind, let me just say something about the traveling and working. That can be a little bit more challenging if you're a nomad, right? So if you're here mostly for sightseeing and just seeing the country in your free time, go for it. You're absolutely right. Vietnam is full of natural wonders and beauty and ethnic diversity even. If you're a nomad, I mean, be aware of the time cost of travel. Be aware of even the energy drain of sitting in a bus, sitting in a plane, sitting in a cab. And you know, like how much resources will you still have available for getting your work done? And then whether you're okay to get work done just maybe in some local cafe, you know, with the like very low plastic chairs that the Vietnamese love. I've done that, and that's possible, right? And it's actually a fun challenge. But it is a bit of a challenge. So most nomads tend to, especially if they do full time, they tend to cherish more spending a little bit more time in one place, finding the right spot for getting work done. But then, you know, the advantage of that is you get to know people a little bit more. You might have your favorite like local coffee shop or banh mi shop, you get to know the people a little bit. You get to know, oh, what's going on in their life right now, which is a very cool insight that you might not get in the same way if you're just kind of like rushing through, right? Okay, sorry, but you actually asked me about the visa situation. And how people are dealing with it, right? So yes, we're on a 1 month visa right now. What my members are doing is border runs, right? And honestly, a lot of the OGs in the nomad community are used to that.
OGs, I just want to get acronyms right. You know, I'm so out of it with it. Yeah.
a lot of the people who've been around the block for a while, right? The people who've been nomading for years in many different countries.
I'd like to take just a quick break here to share with you some new things happening at What About Vietnam. We'll be back to the show shortly. Have you heard about our Girls Getaway Tours? Our first one kicks off 7th of September, so not long to go. We're really excited to bring this innovative program to the touring space for female travellers, as it's an option to experience the country in three very unique ways, and I'm really proud of that. What makes our tours different from the throng of tours out there? Gosh, have I thought about that question? And I've tried to put myself in your shoes to answer it. Firstly, we've aimed it at women who are at that point in their life where they want to stretch their curiosity to visit less well-known places, in particular in Southeast Asia. Maybe they are just not in a position to hook up with fellow travellers or a partner to make the trip themselves, or they don't want to. They just want to hand over the responsibility to someone else, and it ticks all the boxes that they want, and they just want to go and enjoy themselves. Our trip is all about the things we think females will enjoy and get a lot of fun from. Whatever your age is, there's something for everyone, including great food, shopping, cultural experiences, pampering and exploring in luxury, and at a pace that actually makes you feel like you're having a real holiday. It's about fun. It's about giggles. It's about being with like-minded people and soaking up the Vietnamese culture we know and love. Now, the tour has a superpower, and that superpower is in our own expert, Kelly McCarthy. She's going to be right there with you, taking you through these separate experiences featured in the tour. A bustling city, as in Saigon, because you have to see Vietnam as it is now. It is a dynamic country, and that means it includes a very bustling, dynamic city. but it's also got its history hidden in the old town of Hoi An. And there lies the charm, the lanterns, and a story to be told. Then we're going to take you to an exotic island, an island that not everyone will know about, and it is specifically chosen because it has the less trodden tourist on this island. So people are just starting to discover it. So we wanted to be up there for you first, for you to experience it. What it comes down to, we think, about our tours is the small things. The things the bigger companies who take bigger groups can't do. We want to take you to places where we can get a table for 12 easily. We're about boutique luxury. We want you to feel you have your trip plans in our hands. We are going to make it as easy as possible for you to relax and just enjoy it. Signing up for extras is totally up to you or not. Vietnam is so unique in the mix of countries. We aim to show you that side of the country. We're not adrenaline junkies. We're not into high octane activities or adventure. We're really following that suite of we're in it for comfort, not speed. That's us. It will suit the person who is kind of new to traveling solo, maybe. But in saying that, we've got great interest from people who want to bring a girlfriend or maybe their daughter or their mother or sister. And we think that's a great idea and that will save you a little bit on the room rates. We have new dates for 24 plus a new special option. Now, this is where we really separate ourselves out from most tours. What we're going to do is offer you the option, if you want, to not do the whole trip, but just do a section of the trip. So say you're already wanting to go to Vietnam, but you're going as part of a family or a group, and you want to break away from that, and you want to join in with a girl's trip like ours. So if you want to just do the Hoi An and the old town part, you can just come in and join the main group just for that section. If you want to do the island, you can do the same. Or if you want to do the bustling city of Saigon with us, you can do that. This is what we think separates us out from the ordinary tours that are out there. And we think being able to do this will give you more options. You can go from the beginning A to Z of the tour if you wish. But if you can't afford that or you want to mix that up, that option is now going to be available to you. And guys, if you're feeling a bit left out, we didn't want that either, because I have a lot of you following me and I didn't know quite how to put something together to fit what I think you guys would like. So we've put it in this context. We'd like to offer you something specialized. So if your girl is going off to join us for this whole tour or part thereof, and you want something for you, guess what we can do? We can do golf. We can do adventure, caving, wellness, yoga retreat. You might even want to compete in a marathon. You might want to get your paddy diving certificate. All these things are very doable, and I have great contacts in the industry in Vietnam to make sure that that can happen for you, and you can get on the tee on that golf course when you want to, or you can get a specialist paddy diver to take you diving in Nha Trang or wherever you'd like to do it in Vietnam with the right people and the right operators. These would be individually designed for you to match up with the tours. Now, the dates for the new tours are up on the website, so please go to whataboutvietnam.com and go to the Girls Getaway page and you'll see all the information there. Please reach out to us through the request form, through the emails that are on that website, and we would be happy to provide you with a full detailed itinerary and options if you would like, guys, for us to put something specific for you. It's all up on the whataboutvietnam.com website, and we really look forward to you taking part in our next getaways for 2024. Now on with the show.
What does OG actually stand for? Oh, tell us.
Yeah,
please, sure.
Oh, that's exactly good. Sure, that's what good. That
we're
stands
both
for.
In sync on that.
But
it's long term nomads.
But it's kind of like those guys who've been around the block. Okay. You know?
I'm probably one of those guys, but in a different way.
So, right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of things about Vietnam that I think you know that I don't, because I'm working a lot, right? I work a lot and also happen to be in Vietnam. And you're an expert in enjoying Vietnam, I think.
I certainly hope so. All
of its different ways. So the people who've been nomading for years and who know different countries, they know sometimes you're in a place where you have to do board runs. And that means once a month, you jump. I mean, flights from Da Nang are so cheap, right? You fly to Bangkok, you fly to Singapore. I mean, even like to more interesting places like Taiwan, Japan, it's not that expensive. So you do that for a weekend, then you come back and you continue, right? And if you want to stay in one place for many months, it actually becomes quite attractive to spend a weekend, say in Chiang Mai or in Bangkok. That's one option of doing a border run. The other one is taking a bus. That does mean spending the better part of a day in a bus, right? 5 hours to the border to Laos, 5 hours back, that sort of deal. Those tend to be organized trips, so you don't really have to worry about much. It's just a day that you invest, and then that's it. I think both of those are not that bad. Of course, we would prefer to just have a 90-day visa. But even with a 90-day visa, people do border runs, right? It's just a little bit more efficient. You do one border run and you get 3 months for it. With a 90-day visa, in the past, we had people who would do this repeatedly and then stay maybe half a year or something like that.
Us a little bit, if you will, Flo, just about financial planning for this kind of I'm keep referring it to workation, but you know, do you have to have lots of savings set up and to do it efficiently, or to do it in a way, or can you, in your experience, can you kind of do it on a shoestring kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so workation is also a good word for it, right? I feel like there's like a fluid transition from workation to nomading. If you want to try this, you could do a workation for two weeks and try this out, see if that shoe fits you. And then if you decide to stay or do it again, at some point you become a digital nomad.
Do you have to have resources and funds set up, you know, to kind of support you through this while you're figuring it all out, or can you, you know, pretty much do it fairly cheaply?
Got it. Yeah. So for the financial planning part of nomading, I would say it's almost the other way around. People tend to save money while they're nomading. The most popular nomad destinations are quite affordable. Now there are exceptions. Portugal used to be affordable, and then so many nomads came there that now it's actually known to be not that cheap anymore. I mean, maybe if you're coming from like, you know, really expensive cities like London or New York, you'll still be saving money in Lisbon. But, other than that, it's become not affordable anymore. Vietnam, Thailand, many other places, Georgia, are all very affordable countries. And planning always helps. So for example, if you really want to leverage those cost benefits, you probably want to sublet your flat at home, right? You know, you probably want to make sure all of your financial obligations back at home are managed or paused or canceled. And then you really just enjoy having the low cost of life abroad. That's what I would say. And then you can, yes, you can really do it on a shoestring. So for example, Vietnamese in Hoi An will rent a room for maybe like $100, and that includes AC, right? Now that's not Western standards, but
$100 a week or a month, or
right? A month. Now that's what a Vietnamese would usually take, and I'm saying most like most of your listeners would prefer a room that, you know, starts at 250, but maybe more like 350. But because you were asking, is it really possible on a shoestring?
Okay.
My answer is yes. Yes, it really is. And then it scales up, right? So if you're willing to pay $1,000 a month for accommodation, because maybe you used to that from home, you're going to get a villa, right? Possibly like very close to the beach or by the beach. So it's just a lot more bang for your buck. Yeah. And then if we take this another level, this might be a bit of a tangent, but people who really do long-term digital nomading, they might deregister from home, so they're not in their local tax system anymore. And they might be able to save a lot on taxes. So it's a common thing. People who stay in one place less than 6 months, in all of the places essentially where they are less than 6 months, will not trigger tax obligations anywhere. And then a common setup would be to have a US LLC to write your invoices. And that's essentially a tax-free setup. So you can optimize this to a pretty far extent. One thing, the final thing I would add is you do want to think about your health insurance. There are travel insurances are great for travelers, but travel insurances are not the same as a real long-term health insurance. The main difference being that a long-term health insurance cannot kick you out if something serious happens. A travel insurance will be great for, you know, a small accident or whatever. And that's a maybe a financial thing that people might not be thinking about immediately, but that maybe they should. The rest is relatively.
That's really great information. And in particular, I'm glad you talked about the travel insurance versus the health insurance. People tend to consider that a little bit too late in the story. And I think it should be up there in the very early part, especially as I know getting around in Vietnam after a wee while, you want to get a scooter or something like that because it's just so cheap to get around and it's easy, and certainly in Hoi An. So we're going to talk about Hoi An now and what you're doing with the hub, because I got a chance to come out and have a look, and I was describing it, and hope I'm going to do this justice by your standards anyway. But it was amazing just to see the way you have built it so that the people are working in these glass rooms, fully air-conditioned glass rooms, which are kind of almost sitting in a rice paddy field. So they're surrounded by all this nature. And I think on the day I was there, there was a buffalo was kind of musing around the glass. And like no one in there seemed to be perturbed by that. They kind of looked around and then they kept working on their laptops. And then I just thought how crazy great that was, and just why it would be just a real change of environment for people. And I think after COVID in particular, we got a bit starved for environmental changes mm-hmm. and new places again, and our hearts kind of sunk a little bit in that time. So I do see, well, they're calling it now revenge travel, where people are wanting to get back out there and go hard. And I think with the remote work opportunities opening up, you're really in the right place and the right business. So talk to us a little bit about the hub and tell us what you're doing there.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for that lovely description of the hub. The hub has been around since 2017, actually. And before we were in a small location that was also kind of close to the rice fields. But I always felt like it didn't really make use of that. People were kind of like sitting in the bag, and we already had one of the small glass houses there, all glass, and then it looked into the garden, which was also lovely. When I was thinking of growing the hub a little bit bigger, I started looking for properties that are all in on the rice fields. And I got very lucky to find one that's actually right next to the old location almost, and has rice fields on two sides. And I was like, let's double down on this glass house thing people can really enjoy nature. It's something that the locals sometimes don't appreciate as much, I notice. For them, the rice field is probably like an economic area, right? Like that's where like rice is produced. Whereas we see this and we're like, wow, like this intense green and like the wind moving over the grains, right? Like you see it. And then all the nature, all the birds that like love this area. Yeah. So I was like, let's go all in on this and go all glass walls. And that's what I went for. That's essentially the hub. It's all about that view and then the community, right? So we have the silent area, the main glass house is the silent area for focus work, kind of library rules. And the smaller one is a calls aloud room. So we're trying to manage those zones that everybody kind of gets their productivity right. And then we do the events. So right now, as we're talking, actually my staff is doing ice bathing with the members. They go crazy over ice bathing. Somebody suggested this once. And I was like, okay, I want to make this happen for you. I know ice bathing is a thing. And
talk to us popular. About ice bathing. This could be interesting.
Sure. Yeah. So this has really become a trend. And you hear more and more people talking about it now. Essentially, it's a bathtub. We have a movable plastic bathtub. It's a bathtub with a bunch of ice. We buy these days four relatively big bags of ice. I think those are maybe 50-liter bags. People go in there. It drops down to 3-4 degrees Celsius, and people go in for a couple of minutes. It's an intense experience.
For
it's
everyone.
Not necessarily immediately pleasant.
No.
For everyone. It's funny because it's intense, but it's also peaceful at the same time. So you go in and it hurts a little bit. It's a little bit uncomfortable, right? But after about 90 seconds, 2 minutes, like this relaxation starts to kick in. And I don't know, everything kind of like just like tunes out. And then you come out of it and you feel just in bliss. It's pure relaxation. There have actually been studies done that show like dopamine jumps way up. So it makes people happy.
I've heard it's got some antioxidant properties that can come from it as well. So that, you know, your body releases antioxidants after it. And I guess if you're going from a very hot day,
that's right,
and then you're jumping in that, or not jumping in it, but sitting in it very quickly and getting out when you can't stand it any longer. Just those different in temperatures is a good thing for the body to work hard at repairing itself from one extreme to the other. And when you've got 90% humidity in Hoi An, sometimes around about now it would be getting very hot, I would think, over there. So good idea with the cool baths making that happen. That was a smart move. And I guess refreshing for the mind as well for people to, you know, then go back into whatever they're working on. They've just had a little bit of a, you know, a refresh and regroup to go back and work. I think that's a fab idea.
Yeah, and that's what we focus on a lot. Most of our activities are kind of like what also makes sense with getting work done, right? So we might be doing a short meditation, a daily meditation. We might be doing, you know, people go bouldering together. So sometimes we also, you know, all go party together, but that's not that common. So it's, you know, people need to get work done. They need to be fit the next day. We're trying to find a good mix. Yesterday we did board games.
So Flo, tell me, like, what would be the average spend of time would a person have in at the hub? Like, would they come for just a couple of hours? Do they come for, like, do they try and work around a normal day, or do they, like, is it open in the evening? Like, just some gauge on the hours and how you operate from a open perspective.
Sure. Yeah. So for people who've never been there, we have kind of normal opening hours, Monday to Saturday, 9 to 5:30. But once you've come for the first time and maybe paid for either just a day pass or, you know, a longer membership, week pass, month pass, you can stay 24/7 essentially. Because we have members from, we're really one of the most international co-working spaces in Vietnam, maybe the most international. So that means people work European hours, they work American hours. So we need to be
thinking about the global connectivity.
Sorry,
that was the main thing. I was just interested, you know, do they choose to go there and spend a whole day there to knock over whatever they've got to do, or do they just for a couple of hours and then go back to the hotel or do it from somewhere else?
In terms of kind of duration, that's common for our members. The smallest passes is day pass. We decide to not do hourly. Sometimes people will just like walk in. They might be there mostly as tourists, but they're like, okay, I gotta get some work done, and they'll come for a day or two. Pretty common is also a month or maybe 3 weeks. 3 weeks has become very common because people will get a 1 month visa and they might want to spend a couple of days here and there, and then their main chunk is at the hub. And then when people do border runs, you know, they might be staying for several months.
Just to wrap things up with you, Flo, like, would you offer some tips for people who are planning on doing this, or maybe they're talking to their companies about this option? Is there any advice or tips you'd like to share with my readers? Because I'm sure there's going to be some people who are inspired to come and work in Vietnam and maybe work in your hub. So what would be your advice in that space for people?
Yeah, absolutely. So my main advice is just do it. It might seem like this big crazy thing to be working from Vietnam or another exotic country. It's really not. We have all the facilities that you'll need. There's areas where you can have calls, there's good internet. Time zone differences to most places aren't that bad. US time zones are something else. You need to be aware that you can actually work very late. Just do it. In terms of talking to your employer, it might help if you start out with a short duration, maybe start out with a 1 week or 2 week stint, and demonstrate to them that you are productive abroad, right? Prove to them that you can do it. And people do that. It's very feasible. I think that's the main message.
Is it, just to finish up, is it kind of an acceptable practice in Vietnam? Like, how does the Vietnam government feel about it? How do the locals feel about it? Do they think this is a good thing?
Yeah. So from the kind of the law perspective, is you're just here as a tourist. As long as you don't work for a Vietnamese company, you are here as a tourist. You will just get a tourist visa, and that makes it very easy and very simple. Right, you're getting a foreign salary and you're spending that in Vietnam, so that's great. That's what people want. I'm pretty sure the locals, it's still a little bit new for them, and we're not a huge group in proportion to, for example, the tourists, so a lot of them won't yet totally get it. But those that do appreciate us, which I think is really cool, they see we're actually not tourists, we're not backpackers. We might be a little bit, maybe sometimes a little bit more sophisticated, sometimes a couple of years older. And we tend to also be a little bit more interested in actually, what are people like here? People appreciate that. Yeah. So the reputation is really quite decent.
I was just thinking as you were saying that, you know, the domestic tourist, in Vietnam. So this is the Vietnamese who have English very much as their second language, and are very much attuned to working remotely. I wondered whether or not you would start to attract some of those individuals to the hub, because, you know, if they're working in Saigon, and they can still do the same work from Hoi An at the hub and still get their work done. They're in the same time zone, blah, blah, blah. Why wouldn't they, you know, tune in and be able to hook up at the hub with all the Wi-Fi and all the facilities that you offer? So that may be something that you may grow into.
We are seeing that more and more. The number is still rather small. Vietnam is still a slightly more traditional country. And it tends to be a little bit harder for employers here to be like, oh, you're not going to sit in my office. So it's still a bit new. But Vietnam is also a very dynamic country. So there are more and more freelancers. And people from Saigon and Hanoi love Hoi An as well. So it's not only foreigners. It's also there's a lot of internal tourism coming from the big cities. And they're more and more realizing, oh, there's a co-working space here. I can also get work done here. So we're starting from a small number, but it's every year we're getting a couple more Vietnamese. And those, just like our other customers, they tend to be the cool ones, you know, the people you want to have a conversation with, who have interesting stories to tell. I'm sorry you didn't ask about this, but I'm amazed about my customers. Just like the last 2 days, I had conversations with people that like blew my mind and that totally inspired me. And that's one of the things.
Yeah,
I would think it
would be amazing. I mean, just to have so many different people in different work life situations and different countries sharing, you know, their knowledge. I mean, I know that even just the time I spent with you. And, you know, meeting the people, it was like, oh, wow, what a connection to have and what a community to have access to is just fabulous. It was very inspiring. Mm-hmm. I mean, what countries are you seeing come through in the biggest numbers? What countries, you know, are they Aussies? Are they American, European?
Very, very mixed. Very mixed. All of those, all of the above. All of the above. And what I love is that we're seeing more and more also from countries that haven't been as represented before. So we've always had a lot of Europeans. We've always had a lot of Americans. Now we're also increasingly seeing a couple of Japanese, Koreans, more and more Indians, which is really cool. And it's also very, very cool to kind of similarly to our other customers, those tend to be the ones that have like slightly cooler jobs, you know, they might be like a senior product manager or something like that. And it is so good to get across all these stereotypes and just kind of be like, oh yeah, we're all nomading here, right? We're all kind of like young or not so young professionals. And so really from everywhere. Recently, we've had more and more South Americans, a lot of people from Argentina, which is, yeah, so interesting, right? Apparently, it's partly an economic thing, right? So people from Argentina are looking for jobs abroad because of their currency issues and economic woes. And so when they're like, oh, I'm working for a company abroad now, I'm already remote, I might as well, you know, check out this other country. And we're also seeing more Israelis. And there again, we're kind of seeing a push factor of kind of the local political issues that they have. In a way, at the hub, we're also often very much on the cutting edge of like figuring out what's happening in other countries. And so, for example, what I learned recently is that Israel, this is not just a political thing, right? Politics sounds so abstract, right? But there's a deep societal crisis in Israel right now. And similarly, you know, like it might sound so abstract to talk about like currency devaluation, but like people are being pushed out of Argentina and out of their economy because of these issues. But also we learn about tech. We learn about, you know, everybody uses ChatGPT in our space, right? People use these new things and there's so much like exchange going on that it's all very cutting edge. And
Very exciting. And I think, you know, for me, it's life choice, and it's for people who are not satisfied or want something different or want something, you know, as you say, it's not always going to be better, but it will be different. It'll be life changing. You'll get to meet a lot of people that, you know, wouldn't come your way any other way. So I think it has lots of options for people. So to everyone listening, I hope you found some factual as well as kind of experiential knowledge of what it's like to be a digital nomad in Hoi An. And I'm really thankful for you coming on, Flo, to give us that insight, and just great to chat.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kerry.
Thank you for listening. Check out the episode notes for more information.
What about Vietnam?
Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review, and stay tuned for more fun adventures in Vietnam.
What about Vietnam?